Hello, friends and family, and anyone else who watches this show. Welcome back to the MLB Point Form Podcast. I am Alex Krakow, and as always, beside me is the humble. John Cratsiotis.
How's it going?
Oh boy, we got a lot to talk about today. We're going to be going through a list of some pretty interesting stuff. First off, we're going to start with Japanese sensation Masahiro Tanaka signing with, guess what, the New York Yankees. We're going to go with Matt Garza, Clayton Kershaw, Ubaldo Jimenez and Irvin Santana. We're going to touch on Verlander and Holland. Just some other minor signings and who's looking at people around the league. And finally, we're going to touch on instant replay. So a lot of interesting stuff today. Stick around. We're going to play a little bit of music just to get our thoughts straight. And we'll see you on the other side. Welcome back. Our artist of the week is AC/DC.
It's a little different than what we've done so far.
We had Biggie Smalls. We had
Jay-Z.
Was it Jay-Z?
It was Jay-Z. And then we had country
before first. Before we had country music, which will, I promise you, country music fans, we will make another appearance.
We'll see.
Anyway, our first topic, Masahiro Tanaka signing a 7-year, $155 million contract, which bugs me to the core, but wait for a little bit for me to get to that. With the New York Yankees with an opt-out option after 4 years, that is the fourth highest contract of any pitcher ever. Yeah. Not like the top three are Kershaw, Sabathia, who's a teammate of his, and King Felix.
Yeah. And, add the $20 million posting fee, it's 7 years, $175 million, which is exactly what Felix Hernandez did, or what Felix Hernandez got. And it's kind of, I mean, I'm not saying this guy's going to be bad, but you're giving the exact same contract to a guy that's won a Cy Young and thrown a ridiculous number of innings, and he's been an ace for, you know, 6-7 years in Felix Hernandez. You're giving the exact same contract to a guy who's never thrown a pitch in the major leagues. I mean, there's fans of teams that are kind of angry that their team didn't get this guy, but at this price, like, it's pretty risky.
I think he's overpaid.
Mm-hmm.
Because we haven't seen him in the MLB yet, although the Japanese league is kind of like a quadruple A competition. He's got 5 pitches. He'll narrow it down, I guess. His splitter is the most dangerous.
Yep. I think I wrote a blog post where I kind of guessed what his scouting report would be. I wrote a fastball that reaches, you know, goes from 92 to 95, and he can control and command it with the best of them. It's a really nasty above average hard splitter. An average slider, and then he'll occasionally throw a below-average cutter. So he threw more pitches. I think he threw 5 or 6 pitches in Japan, but that's what I'm guessing.
I think he'll get rid of the cutter.
He'll get rid of the cutter?
Yeah, because like you just said, it's below average. So I don't think that they'd spend more time developing that. Mm-hmm. I think they'd rather.
I'm just thinking maybe because he doesn't throw 100,
yeah,
and his fastball's pretty straight. Maybe get some movement.
91 to 94 is what I have down here. 97 when he can crank me back a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But that's at the risk of some control. This guy went 24-0 last year.
24-0 last year. He pitched really well, but once again, it's just Japan. There is, like, some of the concerns that I have with him is he threw a lot of innings last year, and it's not only that he threw a lot of innings, he threw a lot of pitches in some starts, where he had some starts where he threw 160 pitches, and then 2 days later came back and closed out a game or something. Like, he was really overworked over in Japan. That's got to be a concern. I think, I don't know if it was last year or the year before, he was even out a month with a shoulder injury.
I think that was 2012.
So there's a little bit of injury concern, especially with the mm-hmm. number of pitches he's thrown, and there has been some shoulder concerns, but last year I think he was 100% fine. He threw 212 innings, he had a 1.27 ERA and 183 strikeouts. Another concern, actually, is that the strikeout numbers are actually going down from year to year, so it'll be interesting to see how he transitions.
183 strikeouts last year. But listen, in the Japanese league, they don't have the caliber of I'm not going to say players, I'm going to say trainers. Pitchers in the Japanese league go for 100, 120 pitches, and that's on a night when he doesn't throw a lot. Mm-hmm. They think that they don't shelter pitchers like they do in the major leagues. They say, get out there, you get on the mound and you pitch,
yeah.
and you're going to like it. He threw 8 complete games last year, over 212 innings pitched.
Well, another thing, I'm trying to remember where I heard this story. I think it was Gabe Kapler, he works for Fox. He went over to Japan for a year. I don't think it worked out, but he was telling a story on a podcast about his experience in Japan. And he was talking about how hard the practices are. Mm-hmm. Every day you're out there for hours. And it's kind of like the Japanese pitchers have a sense of pride. Every time they go out and they throw a bullpen, they have to throw 100 pitches. So it's like every day they're throwing, you know, 80-plus pitches. It's nuts. So
and
yeah,
that's
that'll
probably
be
where the that risk for injury comes mm-hmm. in. Because he's throwing 100-pitch bullpens. Because he's throwing 120 pitches every time he takes the mound. Like, not everyone can be a Justin Verlander. Justin Verlander, we'll get into him later, throws 120 pitches on a bad night.
Yep.
And he'll go 7 innings. But I think that on the Yankees, Sabathia will retain the number 1 spot.
Oh, yeah.
Tanaka likely a number 2.
Well, we'll see, because the rotation, I think, slots right now is Sabathia's number 1 and then Kuroda the number 2.
I like Kuroda.
Yeah, he's a very good pitcher. He's actually a good comparison to what Tanaka could be. And then he's number 3.
I think he's the best fitted for the New York Yankees. Although as much as I dislike him going there, me being a Jays fan,
yep.
because they need as much help in the rotation as they can get. Because I mean, Phil Hughes means like he was crap.
He's gone this year,
but he's gone. Andy Pettit's gone. So they need help, especially with their lackluster infield right now.
Yeah, they have a terrible. You know, right now I don't think they're. You know, 100-win team or anything. They're a good team. But they were the team that needed him the most.
Anyone with Kelly Johnson at third base is not a 100-win team.
But so right now, the Kelly. Yankees are blowing past the luxury tax. I don't think they care anymore. But the one big concern...
They're the Yankees.
Sorry?
They're the Yankees.
Yeah, but I think they... You know, there's rumors that they wanted to get under, save some money. But obviously not now. But the one big concern I think I have for Tanaka, I think he's actually going to be a good pitcher. Like, I don't think he's going to be bad at all. I think he's going to be, like, a good, you know, number 3 or number 2. But the one concern I have is in Japan, the Japanese pitchers like to throw their fastballs high. They like to throw a high fastball because a lot of the hitters just hit for contact. And especially at Yankee Stadium and the MLB, more guys are going to be, you know, trying to hit home runs instead of just hitting for contact.
Short porch, right field.
And a lot of those high fastballs, if he keeps throwing them, are going to get hit out. So he's going to have to... I don't think he's... You know, a lot of people kind of try to compare him to Darvish. He's a completely different pitcher. He tries to, he's more of a pitch to contact guy, especially with a split or weak contact sort of thing. But he's just going to have to be careful with the high fastball. And he's going to change how he pitches, really.
Larry Rothschild, the pitching coach for the Yankees, said that he's both physically and mentally fit, which is true because he's coming from Japan. But like you were saying, he's got to get his fastball down, because you were right. I watched his highlight video, and whenever he strikes someone out with a fastball, it's above the belt.
Yep.
Major league hitters aren't going to let that go. They're going to hit it over the fence. Mm-hmm. His curveball, I like his curveball, but it reminds me of Carlos Villanueva's 53-mile-an-hour curveball to Jason Worth. It's a looper.
Yeah.
Major league hitters are going to crush that. But anyway... Good for the Yankees, signing a 24-year-old phenom.
He's 25 now. He's 25
now.
I turned 25 in November. Mm-hmm. And I kind of wrote in a blog that, you know, I think he's going to be a number 3 or number 2. And our next topic is going to be talking about guys that are number 3 or number 2.
Yep.
But the difference is he's 25. And you're going to get him for all his prime years. Maybe he even gets better now. Some of the guys in free agency are, you know, 31, 32.
Right.
And whether they keep him for 4 years or 7... They're going to get all his prime years instead of, you know, there's no years, unless he's horrible, that are going to be, you know, down years.
Should the rest of the AL East be worried?
You know, not really, I don't think. I mean, right now, my AL East standings would probably be, like, as a guess, would probably be the Rays, Red Sox, and then the Jays and the Yankees are kind of in there, 85 wins each sort of thing. And then Baltimore, but, I mean, the Yankees infield is so bad with Teixeira. I don't know what he is anymore. Who's at second base? Brian Roberts. And then Derek Jeter. I don't know what his condition is with injuries, and he's getting old now.
I think Derek Jeter's got one more year left in him.
And then third base, Kelly Johnson right now.
Yes.
So, I mean, that's...
Sign my jersey, Kelly.
They don't have a great... They have a horrible infield. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not like they have the best pitching rotation either. You know, Sabathia was shaky last year at best. And then Tanaka's kind of a guess right now. And the only solid guy I think they have is Kuroda.
So. There's a lot of people saying that, like, all the AL East is screwed now, but he's a starting pitcher. He pitches once every 5 days.
Yep.
You might not run into him all the time. Maybe the Jays will get lucky. Maybe they'll have a 4-game series where Tanaka pitched the last day.
Yep.
Or he might not be everything that they thought.
Yep. But it seems like the Yankees...
Daisuke. Look at Daisuke.
Yep. But it seems like the Yankees are trying to win now, and there was rumors that they were trying to get under the luxury tax. And now they've kind of blown past it. I think they have to keep going with their signings. We'll talk about some more free agents next, but I think they should still be in on these free agents if they really want to make a run this year, because they obviously don't care about the luxury tax, unlimited amount of money. So,
speaking of wanting to win now, the Milwaukee Brewers making a splash. Well, not really a splash, kind of like a minor waiting
pool
thing.
He's a good pitcher, but you know.
Matt Garza, Milwaukee's not that good. 4 years, $52 million, pending a physical. 2012 with the Cubs. I'm not going to tell him his 2013. Him? You. I'm not going to tell you his 2013 stats because he was in the minors all the whole season. 5-7, 103 innings pitched, 3.91 ERA. And you're going to pay $52 million over 4 years. I mean, he's got experience in the AL East, but that means nothing because he's...
Well, the thing with Garza is he's had some extremely successful seasons in the past, but he's had so many injuries now. Apparently... I even heard there's even been issues with this contract. Like, it's not finalized yet because the physicals are going to be so long.
There's some
long.
Issues with his physical.
Like,
that's what I heard.
His medical history is crazy, apparently, how much there is on documents and everything. And especially now, Milwaukee's going to get their own doctors to see him. And
yeah.
It's going to be a long process. It's not going to be official for a long time.
See, that's what people are misunderstanding. It's not that Garza doesn't pitch well. It's that he's not well when he pitches.
Yep.
He's never healthy.
Yep.
So I think that the Milwaukee Brewers are taking a big, big, big risk. But
he's a good,
it's an interesting move because they're getting Braun back. Gomez had a really good year last year. They want to sell more tickets. But they're in the same division as the St. Louis Cardinals. And they're just going to beat down on everyone this year.
Well, I don't think Milwaukee's going to be any good this year. I think this is kind of... It's a really risky signing because, you know, even last year we saw... I think he threw... a couple complete, you know, shutouts last year. I don't know how many threw last year, but he was really good last year for a couple starts, and then he'd be injured for a month, and they didn't pitch well for Texas at the end of the season. But, you know, Milwaukee isn't that good of a team. Their prospects are horrible. You know, they have some guys that are okay, but they've also traded, you know, they traded Aoki out of the outfield. You know, they're not really a good team. They're maybe, you know, a last place team in that division. But, you know, they're banking on 200 innings for Garza.
They're also trying to re-energize their fan base and sell tickets. They're using some money from their TV deal.
They really went for it a couple years ago when they traded Brett Laurie and Escobar for, you know, guys like Greinke and Sean Markham, and they made the playoffs, but now they're paying for it because they don't have a farm system. They don't have young players. But I don't know. Milwaukee doesn't look like a good franchise right now. We'll see how they turn out. But they do have some stars on that team. And if Garza and, you know, Kyle Loesch can have a good year, you never know. Maybe 500 or so.
Well, NL Central is the NL Central.
Mm-hmm.
Your St. Louis is always going to be at the top.
Cincinnati and Pittsburgh now also.
Yep.
And the Cubs are rising.
We're going to take a short break. Next, we're going to talk about what blows me away, Clayton Kershaw's contract. We're going to talk about Ubaldo Jimenez, Irvin Santana, what little hope the Jays have. Also, what's the replay? Stick around. Welcome back. You're listening to the MLB Point Forum podcast on MLBPointForum.com or Facebook or Twitter or whatever. Our last song, Money Talks, Money Does Talk, in the case of Dodger starting pitcher Clayton Kershaw signing a 7-year extension worth, wait for it, $215 million. Wow.
The average annual, I think it's the first time that the average annual value is going over $30 million on a player's contract is $30.7 million. So
if he makes 30 starts a season, it's $1 million a start. The world of sports, not just baseball, any sport, has kind of ruined my sense of surprise when it comes to big contracts. So the original statement of $215 million didn't really, I was like, yeah, that's expected.
Yeah.
But I was listening to the Jeff Blair show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and he broke it down. And just the pure numbers of what he gets per day or what he gets per start, I was like, jeez, that's a lot of money.
But it's not a shock anymore. I mean,
no, you're right.
Baseball's making so much money right now. They've been on a steady kind of going up cycle the last 20 years. They haven't really had a labor dispute or anything since, I think it was 94, 95. And baseball's just been growing like crazy. A lot of people kind of are saying, oh, kids don't like baseball anymore, it's boring. But they're making more and more money. Owners are making more money. The TV deals are insane now. I mean, the owners are making tons of money. It's only fair that the players get some of it. And the players' contracts just keep going up as the value of baseball keeps going up.
The TV deal that the Dodgers just signed with KCAL, $8 billion.
Yep.
So they literally have money to burn.
And their owners were already insanely rich before, so I think there's
AKA Magic Johnson. That guy lights his fireplace with $100 bills.
Well, he was only a part of the group. Like, he was the face of the group of the Dodgers, but he was two.
Doesn't matter. He's loaded.
But they have tons of money to spend. This is, you know, I wrote about it and I said, you know, is he worth $30 million? He's the only $30 million guy. And he is, really. I mean, he's 25 years old. He's a left-handed pitcher who doesn't get injured. He's won two Cy Youngs, 5 straight seasons with the ERA under 3. Last year, he had 1.83 ERA and 236 innings pitched. I mean, he's the best pitcher in the major leagues right now, and they're going to get him his entire prime. And
yeah, he's signed until he's 32, 33. Yeah.
There might be an opt-out clause in there. I'm not 100% sure.
I was just about to say that. Something notable is that the contract does not include a no-trade clause. But the wording in the contract would suggest that it does. It doesn't explicitly say that he has a no-trade contract, but if he were to be traded, he has the right to void the deal.
Yeah, but
which is more or less a no-trade.
They're not going to trade him. They have the best pitcher in baseball for the next 7 years under contract.
I mean, even if he is the best pitcher in baseball, who would want to take that salary?
Well, there's only two or three teams that could afford him, right? The Yankees, maybe the Astros.
Maybe
right
the
now.
Astros, maybe the Red Sox.
Yeah.
But,
you know, if there's going to be a $30 million pitcher, this is the guy, right? And it's not only that he's a really good pitcher, he's actually like a really good person as well. Like, he spends a lot of time with his wife going to Africa and, you know, I think he bought a school in Africa and he spends a lot of money in that. So a lot of this money is actually going to be going towards charity and helping other people. So he's not like a bad guy who's going to be spending it all on, you know, cars and, you know, not that it's horrible, but he's going to be spending a lot of money on helping other people.
Well, listen, Dodgers are looking fantastic right now.
They are.
I would not be surprised if they're Vegas World Series favorites, which they probably are.
Mm-hmm.
Is it too much money to pay for someone who only plays one out of 5 days?
I don't think so. I think, you know, he's worth so much to that team, especially when you get a playoff series, 7-game series, he could potentially pitch 3 of the games, right? He's the best pitcher in baseball. He's going to go out and, you know, contend for the Cy Young for the next 7 years.
Yeah, he's the king of the ERA. I mean, he's going to give the Dodgers at least 15 wins. At least, if not more.
We'll see what obviously has to do with the run support, but
plus, he has the rotation to back him up, too.
Yeah, he's one hell of a pitcher. Like, he's the best pitcher in the league by far, I think, right now, and he's worth $30 million. If you're going to give somebody $30 million a year, this is going to be the guy. Maybe him, you know, Mike Trout, those type of players, young, at the top of their game. You know, he looks like a Hall of Famer right now already. and you lock him up for 7 years, however much the price is, it's going to be worth it.
I would not want to face that man's curveball.
No, that's ever nasty.
Anyway, next topic. A topic that hits us close to home. Home being Toronto. Ubaldo Jimenez.
Yeah, in the top remaining free agents.
And Irvin Santana, which the Blue Jays are desperately trying to sign, but we'll...
Well, the thing is with these pitchers is... I think it was Alex Anthopoulos that said that you never know. These two could go into March and even February without contracts because the big thing is they're linked to draft picks. And there's a lot of teams that don't want to give up the first-round pick to sign these guys. And you can even include Steven Drew. There's been rumors with him. But there's a lot of... These guys are all linked to draft pick compensation, which is kind of ridiculous. It hurts the players more than anything because there's less teams interested. Mm-hmm. But
something else that they're both asking for both dollars and years. Like, I want an X amount of dollars and X amount of years. Yeah. So I think most teams are waiting until that year that year number goes down.
Yep.
The market will increase. Well, the market has already increased now that Tanaka's gone, and people are looking for starting pitchers.
Well, I actually think the Garza signing hurts those two because now
it does.
I think his average value is $13 million a year, and they're looking at it and they're going, wow, our stats, even though our health is the same, or not the same, our stats are relatively the same, so we're not going to cash in on that big $20 million contract. I think right now Irvin Santana said he's looking for 4 years, around $60 million, which is $15 a year, which... You know, isn't a bad deal, but if you got to give him $60 million plus a first-round pick, there's a lot of teams that, even though they need pitching, they're not willing to give up, you know, the 20th overall pick in the draft. That's a big, big thing for these free agents.
I think a four-year deal would be good. 4 or 5, and us being Jays fans, we know that Anthopoulos won't give anything over 5 years because he's a...
Well, I wouldn't give 5 years to... either of these guys are over 5 years.
No.
I mean, both these guys have concerns, even though they pitched well, really well last year. If you look at Santana, I think he's coming off a year, not last year, but the year before, where he led the league in home runs allowed. And if you're looking at the Jays, you know, that stadium is just bombs go out there every single day.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's one of the concerns for him. It's not injuries or anything, but he gives up a lot of home runs.
Yeah, Santana gives up a lot of home runs, and Jimenez walks more people.
He walks people, and he's had injury problems, and he throws weird. So that could explode.
Yeah,
I've
always questioned his windup.
But he did work with the Cleveland pitching coach pitching coach last year, and he improved a lot over the second half. So I think if I'm looking at those two, let's say the prices were relatively the same, I think Jimenez is the better option because he has the higher upside than Santana, but Santana's, I think, the safer guy with no injury history. But they both have, you know, high contract demands. They both, if you sign one, you have to give up your first round pick, and they have some concerns about them. Even though they're the two top guys, they do have some kind of interesting concerns about those two.
Well, we both know that the Jays are in talks with them, but something different that we're doing here at the office of MLB Platform. We're releasing a Blue Jays only podcast simultaneously with this episode. So at the time that you're hearing this, our Blue Jays podcast will already be released. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about Anthopoulos.
I think our goal for the website, for me at least, was to kind of keep it equal between we don't want to show our love for the Blue Jays too much, but I think we know so much about the Jays and we're in Toronto. I think we're going to do a couple of these podcasts where we just talk about the Jays for a long period of time. So we're going to keep doing these podcasts, obviously, but I think we're going to do a couple Jays only podcasts as well.
Next, Justin Verlander. His general manager said that his surgery on his abdominal muscles or core, whatever the fuck you want to call it, went successfully. But he needs 6 weeks of rehab. Now, this kind of worries the fans more than anything because, if you remember, the Tigers traded for Doug Fister. They sent him to Washington. They got him out of the American League, which is good. But they traded him for a bucket of balls. Like
relief pitchers.
They have a hole in their rotation to fill. I mean, Smiley, Porcello, Sanchez, Scherzer, they're good pitchers, but even if he misses a start, it could take a while for him to build back his arm strength because he's starting later than everyone else. Mm-hmm. It could be a while before he's throwing 110, 115 pitches again.
Yep. Well, if you look at the rotation before they traded Fister, you look at, you know, if Verlander gets injured, they have Fister who's going to throw 200 innings. They have Sanchez who's going to throw 200 innings. Porcello doesn't get injured that often. I mean, they have guys behind them that are good, but now that they've traded Fister for kind of minor league relief pitchers, there is a hole there, especially if Verlander can't come back early mm-hmm. enough. And then, you know, if you look, I don't think they're going to be interested in signing any of the top pitching free agents. So it could be an interesting hole that they have to fill, especially if Verlander takes a while to get to get kind of back to what Verlander is.
It's kind of a big-ish loss. I mean, I'm not saying that he's for sure going to miss the start of the season, but all means considered, he could be ready for spring training. But this means so much for a World Series caliber team.
Yep, and especially now that Kansas City's looking really well, really good. One or two games could decide the division, and one or two starts could decide the division. So even if it's early in the season, it could be some important starts that he misses.
Another injury update that we want to get you filled in on. Texas Rangers lefty, Derek Holland, the king of the mustache, shattered or tore his knee, chasing his dog down the stairs. I was telling Johnny before we started, this is possibly the cutest injury I have ever heard of. But at the same time, Texas fans are just going, ugh, because he's missing half of the season.
The initial report is half the season. We'll see how long he's actually out for. But they've already given up some draft picks, especially with the Chu signing. They've given up a bunch of draft picks there, their high draft pick at least. And I don't think they're going to be in the contention for any of the top free agents either. So that's a big deal also. He's 200 innings, solid pitcher, and they have a really good lineup. And kind of a shaky back end of the rotation, which is stabilized by the front, which is Holland and Darvish. And now if Holland misses half of the season, it's kind of interesting. And it's not like they're in a bad division. They're in a really good division mm-hmm. with Oakland, and Seattle's even improved a little bit. And the Angels will be improved this year. So
I still like Texas, though.
Yeah, Texas for sure, for me, I think, is the winner in that division right now for me. And maybe the second or first best team in the American League East. But half of a season missing Holland could be, you know, two or three games. And that may be, you know, Oakland's been good the last couple of years. Maybe Oakland pushes them out of first place and they have to play in the wild card game. You never know. It is a big injury because he's such a good pitcher and he's missing half of the season. So we'll see how they kind of replace him.
Well, there's a lot of moves. There's a lot of free agents still on the market. New York Yankees are interested in Steven Drew, although some higher-ups in the Yankees organization kind of threw cold water on all the reporters saying that they wanted to sign him. Tampa Bay still may trade David Price. He's got 2 years left until free agency. But the only problem with that is when he does reach free agency, he's easily going to have to take $200 million for a team to sign him, giving the Tanaka contract, giving the Kershaw extension, because Price is an all-star caliber pitcher, and he fits well on pretty much every team.
No, every team. Yeah, every team needs an ace, so.
Now, one last question before we get into instant replay for a few minutes. Who do you think this offseason has done the best job so far? For me, it's the Seattle Mariners.
Just because of Cano?
Not just because of Cano, just because that I'm speaking in terms of moving higher up in the division. I think they picked up Cano, they picked up Corey Hart, Logan Morrison. They've got a great starting rotation, a great first two, which is okay. Iwakuma.
And then they have Taiwan Walker, one of the prospects coming up this year.
Yeah. But in terms of moving up in the standings, I mean, Seattle's in the AL West. And, you know, Rangers, we just talked about them. But they won't win the division for sure, even with Cano, which is why I think Cano's going to be miserable. But What's your take on this? Who do you think's done the best job so
far? You could look at, I think I have two teams in mind, and they're in totally two different situations. The first one, I think, would be the Yankees. They've spent a crap ton of money this offseason. McCann, an all-star catcher, Ellsbury, an all-star center fielder. Tanaka could be, you know, an all-star pitcher. But they have some holes. So, you know, they've spent a lot of money. I think they've gotten the highest quality of players. But I think the team that's done the most solid job this offseason for me is the Tampa Bay Devil Rays. If they don't trade David Price, they, you know, they re-signed James Loney. They got Ryan Hannigan to play catcher for them. They've signed a couple of really good relief pitchers. They just signed Grant Balfour. And they're kind of just where they were last year. They're kind of the same team. They haven't lost anybody big. And for me, they're the best team because they've kind of kept everybody together. They've kept their core together this offseason so far. That's, you know, bearing a David Price trade. And I think they're the best team in the league, or in the American League East, because, you know, they've kept kind of everybody together, especially James Loney. And they've actually spent money this offseason, which is one of the first things, one of the first times they've done that. So if you look at those two teams, it's completely different. I mean, the Yankees lost Cano, and they spent a lot of money. But then you got Tampa, who, you know, kept a bunch of their offensive pieces, and I think they're a good team. So, I think Tampa, for me, because they've just, they're, every year they just seem like they're, you know, a 90-win team.
You talked about the Rays catching. Did they get rid of Lobaton?
I'm not sure if they got rid of him. I just know they replaced him with Hannigan, yeah. who is good defensively, and he's had some good offensive years. He was had a down year last year. But I think it's better than what they've had. So they've improved there, and then, you know, they kept Loney. They've improved in the bullpen. So we'll see what they do with David Price, but I like Tampa a lot this year.
Our last topic, which we'll just touch on for like a minute or so, instant replay. There's going to be a full umpiring crew in New York City. One umpire watching two games at a time. It's going to be a challenge system. There's going to be one challenge, and if a manager gets it right, he gets another. After the seventh inning, it's the umpire's jurisdiction, kind of like the two-minute warning in the NFL. But something that interests me is that they're leaving the vicinity rule at second base in. The only thing left out of a 100% accuracy system. But I agree with it, just so players don't get trampled. I like it, but it's going to take some time for people to get used to it. And it's a drastic change. And some of the problems that I'm hearing is that it could make the game slower than it already is.
Yeah. I think it does. It obviously makes the game slower than it already is, but I want to get the calls right. You know, there's so many plays in the past couple of years I can think of where they're end of the year. It's a big call, whether it's a play at first base or fair or foul. I remember, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago, or maybe 4 or 5 years ago, where Minnesota was playing the Yankees in the playoffs. And I think it might have been bases loaded, or there was guys on base, and Maurer hit a double down the line. And it landed, you know, 3 feet fair. And the umpire that was an outfield umpire because of the playoffs called it foul, and that could have won the game for Minnesota and changed the whole series.
Or the infield fly that happened a few years ago.
Yeah, that as well. So
that was the Braves, wasn't it?
And Braves and Cardinals, those two teams. But, you know, even if it takes a little bit more time, it's not like they're going to be challenging every single play. And you got to get the calls right. Like, you just have to get the calls right. You have the technology now to do it, and, you know, you get all that crap about, you know, the human element sort of thing. And you just got to get the calls right. Let the players play and make the right calls.
That's going to do it for us here at the office, which is basically a room at the MLB Point Forum, the website. If you'd like, take a look at our Twitter. Our handle is at MLB Point Forum. You can take a look at our personal Twitters if you want that. That's on our website. We're currently getting a professional website developed by a close friend of ours. And we're also... announcement. Next time we record, we are going to have a special guest, Philadelphia Phillies infielder, Pete Orr, will be in studio.
What is that, about 99% chance of happening?
It's 100% chance.
Okay, so.
He already gave me the confirmation, so that'll be some incentive for you listeners out there to keep listening. Anyway, we thank you. As always, stay tuned. We're going to put up, our Jays podcast as soon as this one goes up, which should be in the next coming days or so. That's going to do it. Our artist of the week was AC/DC. If you'd like, leave some tweets or Facebook messages or whatnot for other suggestions for artist of the week, because we're running out of ideas, frankly. For John Cassiotis, I'm Alex Crocco. We will see you next time.